It's the last shot of the game. Holds the ball out against Batum. Circles to his right, dances back, fires.
Sriracha! Sriracha! He's hot!
Oh, my goodness! Knocked it free. Butler picked it. Oh, he beat it badly.
Meet me at the rim, and don't be late.
And one coming. Oubre thought he was playing good defense, and Oubre. Jimmy just said, I'll see you later. How will
you make it? Gentlemen, I found it. I finally found it.
Yes.
The single hottest take, dumbest article I've ever read in this industry. And I don't say that lightly. It legitimately is one of the dumbest things. 500 words of piping hot deliciousness from the Score 670 website.
Yes.
Written by Dan Bernstein. Mm-hmm. Very credible name. Afternoon drive host on the Score 670. One of the top sports stations, I think, in the country on a local level.
Mm-hmm.
Should we just read from this?
Yeah, just read from it. It's great.
So it's a Jimmy Butler is leaving article, and we're going to take shots in order to raise up our masculinity in a large city here. Jimmy Butler's star, not as bright, up north.
Yes.
Is the title here. I mean, it's hacky, it's dumb. It attempts to play into Minnesota's insecurity and inferiority complex, and really it just projects Chicago's apparent insecurity.
Most definitely, yeah.
The only thing Jimmy Butler seems to like as much or more than playing basketball is being famous for playing basketball, Dan Bernstein writes. He has embraced his personal narrative of small-town kid gone Hollywood, even down to the actual hanging out in Hollywood part. He makes his off-season home in Los Angeles the better for spending time with movie star pal Mark Wahlberg.
Mm-hmm.
His best bud on the Bulls was Dwayne Wade, a fashionable jet setter himself, who set the example for Butler of how a wealthy star looks and behaves. Good luck cutting that same figure in Minneapolis, however. It's a great city, don't get me wrong. Summers are nice there, even if some of the other months can test one's resolve. It's just really hard to be notable in Minneapolis, no matter what one's stock in trade is. Kevin Garnett transcended the number 15 market for a bit, and other athletes have been able to shine for a time. Props to Kirby Puckett, Adrian Peterson, Fran Tarkenton, Randy Moss, and, Joe Mauer? Alan Page? I'm sure I'm forgetting some, because that's pretty much the point, Dan Bernstein writes.
Mm-hmm.
Now that Prince is gone, Bob Dylan probably would carry the flag for the Minneapolis team at some theoretical opening ceremony, though he was born in Duluth, raised in Hibbing, and escaped for New York City in 1961. I'm going to skip past the old and tired Al Franken jokes and Jesse Ventura jokes.
Yep.
And other cliche celebrities here. This is all to say that Jimmy Butler will need to be a very special player to overcome the smaller, lonelier, colder stage on which he now performs. If the spirit moves him, there's always St. Paul's Fitzgerald Theater nearby, where Garrison Keillor once presided before abdicating his chair. Thanks, Dan Bernstein.
Mm-hmm. This is, okay, congratulations, because what Dan Bernstein's done here is a true throwback. This is radio. This is a really, really hard-hitting piece that just, you know, our guy's gone and we're going to rip you circa 1986.
I was going to say it's stuck in the 90s, much like Chicago Bulls fans and the franchise.
But this is, but what he's doing
and
here.
And the media, apparently.
But what he's doing here is he is attempting to get a rise, but he's doing it in a way that's so far back, it doesn't even think about the fact that you now have teams that are good in Cleveland, Oklahoma City, go on and on. But yes, I think the key thing to keep in mind here about Chicago is as big as that town is and as fun as that town can be, the insecurity in that town might actually be worse than us. I honestly think that. I believe that Chicago might be more insecure when it comes to sports and overall vulnerability in their mind than we are.
Well, we definitely check all the obvious cliche rips, all the boxes that you would have to check for an obvious cliche hacky article ripping Minnesota. We check the not a large market box here. We check the Minnesota doesn't have as many celebrities box. We check the Minnesota is cold box. And then we definitely check the Al Franken, Bob Dylan, and Jesse Ventura reference / jokes box.
Yes.
But like you're saying, the argument that your city is small, and so you or the player playing in your city is not relevant. It is 15 years past relevant itself, that argument. Jimmy Butler's Instagram account has more followers than Chicago has people. Facebook now has more active users than California has people. And like you were saying, Judd, of the most prominent NBA teams and players right now, a majority of the most popular jerseys, for instance, of the top 15 to 20 jersey sales in basketball, more than half the list comes from Cleveland, Oklahoma City, San Antonio, Milwaukee, Toronto, Oklahoma. I mean, it's so meanwhile, the big markets, let's just stick to the NBA with this one. The big markets, Chicago and New York and LA got to be relevant. You're all dumpster fires. The Chicago Bulls, remember what it was like when Michael Jordan retired and then eventually went to the Wizards? Remember what it was like from like 1998? Yeah. Well, 1998 through, they had a brief playoff blip with like Kirk Heinrich.
When
but
Jerry Krause convinced himself that if Jordan's gone, I will get my proper deserved credit for the fact that I'm a great executive and therefore I'm going to build this great team without Jordan. No, they're not.
Yeah, so remember what it was like from 1998 through like, I don't know, until you drafted Derrick Rose? Well, buckle up because it's going to be a lot like that for the next 5 years or so. Meanwhile, we got your coach. We got your best player. And the Timberwolves are going to be one of the most relevant teams in basketball for the next 5 to 10 years unless Karl-Anthony Towns gets hit by a bus.
And what are you? When it comes to the people that run your team right now, the Bulls, you are a dumpster fire. That is the unbelievable thing to me is when you look at the Knicks, the Bulls, and the Lakers until now, all three have been run the last, let's say, 5 years or more incompetently. When you look, the Knicks... Phil Jackson leaves. You know what? That's great. James Dolan's still there. The Bulls. Gar Forman. What are you doing? I mean, how do the people that own the Bulls not look at the Bulls and the people trying to run them and say, you're awful. You're all fired. The Lakers. Jeannie Buss, who I think is smart, employs her brother. He's a complete buffoon.
I think he's gone now.
He is gone. But my point is this. For the last 5 years or so, three of your most important heritage franchises have been run as complete jokes because the people that own those teams allow them to be run that way.
The size matters argument is amazing. And we're getting a ton of feedback on Twitter here. And I sent out the article before the show and on Instagram. I mean, the league's most prominent star lives in Akron. I mean, that's a hello.
Yes.
And I know that Dan Bernstein, I know that the glory days of Chicago basketball, and I know we're sitting here in a glass house because there have been no glory days of Timberwolves basketball. When shots are fired across the bow, though, I think the only reason why I felt compelled to bring this article to light of day is because it's super fun to just shoot it down. It is a fish flopping in a barrel, and it's target practice for us. So why is it always the bitter, insecure radio guy who writes the article? Remember when Adrian Peterson got suspended and took a tree branch to a child? Like, here we have Dan Bernstein in Chicago.
It's bitter guy, but he also knows that if he goes to the old staple of, here's what I'm going to do, write something inflammatory that rips a town, I'll get paid attention to.
Well, and
he does.
This one you've got, you know, Chicago trying to pick on little brother, quote unquote, Minnesota. And a few years ago, it was Shan Sheriff, one of the hosts in Dallas. Dallas has a million sports radio stations. I can't remember which one he's on. But it was basically, hey, Adrian, we know that beating your kid isn't okay up north. But, you know, we're totally cool with that here with the Cowboys. You can come down. Yes. We'll supply you with tree branches.
And
in fact,
they've got Zeke, so not so much now. But then, definitely. Definitely. But the one thing that I do find incredible is I think there are a lot of people still left who believe that the NBA and sports revolves around if you're not playing on the coast or something, it doesn't matter. It doesn't. I mean, when are people going to realize, especially in that league, it doesn't matter? And it did at one time.
Sure,
it did
of course.
One time. It doesn't anymore, and it's not even relevant when you look at how bad the Lakers and Knicks and teams like that have been.
Well, I can see when you probably still wear boxer briefs with Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen's faces on them. Like, I can understand why you might be stuck in the 1990s or even the early 2000s. But let's just for fun, who's a bigger star in the NBA? Carmelo Anthony or Russell Westbrook?
Westbrook, it's not even close.
Yeah, and it's New York City versus Oklahoma City.
Not,
who's a bigger star? Kyrie Irving or well, I would even say, how about this, Kyrie Irving or Chris Paul?
Kyrie
and you
Irving.
Could say like they're probably on a par, but I would even say Kyrie Irving.
Kyrie right
That's
now.
LA versus Cleveland.
Yes.
So it's everything's global now.
Yes.
Yeah, Jimmy Butler has, I looked this up, has, if you count his Twitter, I don't know how many Snapchat followers, I don't even know if he's on Snapchat, but he has like 3 million, 2.5 million Instagram followers.
Yep.
And I want to say 500,000. He's got about 3 million followers across those platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago's population is 2.7 million. So Jimmy Butler literally has more. The city of people following him on social media is larger than Minneapolis, of course.
You don't get
and
it.
Chicago. It's larger than most markets not named
you
LA.
You don't understand.
And New York.
He's going to fall apart here. His game is going to completely fall apart because he's not playing for Chicago.
No one's
going to
find it. And by the way, Kevin Garnett became one of the most notable superstar athletes in the world from Minneapolis. It's just such a ludicrous, antiquated argument.
I have one quick question, though. This is boring and tired, and I get all that. But when you sit down to write this, are you really going to take a shot at our winters when you live in Chicago? Like, aren't you thinking to yourself, you know what, that's probably a dumb shot because there are weeks and months in Chicago that are worse than here.
Yeah,
they get more snow at times.
A little windy along the
it's windy,
waterfront.
It's miserable. It's cold. Are you really thinking to yourself, okay, here's a good one. Our winters are sort of awful, but theirs are more awful.
It's like living in southern Texas and ripping on the summer heat in Arizona. Like, yeah, it's hot. It's cold.
Anyway, congratulations, Dan Bernstein.
So, Indy chimes in here on social media. A top five dumb article that you're talking about on the radio. Yeah, for target practice. Chime in at Phil Mackey, at 1500 ESPN Judd on Twitter. And you can also, we're stepping up our Instagram game to Instagram.com/1500ESPN and Facebook.com/1500ESPN. Let's come back and get to some more Wolves speculation here. There was another Ricky Rubio rumor yesterday from a credible reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And a very notable player who's a free agent who has championship cred, who might have some ties here to the Timberwolves as the league year opens up on July 1st. Plus, a midweek scoop with Doogie at 10:15. Jason Stark for the weekly baseball conversation at 11:30. Mackey and Judd.
Hang on. Mackey and Judd will return shortly.
You won't regret this.
On 1500 ESPN.
My little baby on Diggy. Get her ass too fast. Don't quit. You know I like it like that.
Okay, goes to Iguodala. Gets in the paint. Tried to spin and lost it. Iguodala pushing, goes all the way and throws it down.
We should actually make this an all 90s bumper music show. Can we just do all like mid to late 90s bumper music in honor of the mid to late 90s take from Dan Bernstein, the score 670s?
Straight boy bands.
Yeah. Maybe a little, you know, NSYNC, mixing some NSYNC Backstreet Boys, but I'm thinking even some like En Vogue, maybe some true mid-90s when the Bulls really ramped up. Yeah,
that's a really bad idea.
TLC
really
throw it back. Make the
really
score 670
idea.
In Chicago feel really comfortable. Really comfortable about the last time the Bulls were.
You know what? It's so cold here, no one wants to play here. I mean, because the Skyways, they don't work.
No, they don't even
have Skyway system does not work.
It's crazy.
It just doesn't work.
So we have NBA rumors ramping up here. Free agency opens up on July 1st, which is Saturday, and you're going to be able to find coverage on 1500ESPN.com. The NHL league year also opens up on Saturday, so we're going to have... Now, players can sign in the NHL over the weekend, but they can only agree in the NBA, right?
And I believe NBA free agency, the negotiating period actually starts at 11:01 p.m. Friday our time, and then you can't sign, and there can't be trades completed until July the 6th.
Okay.
So there's a moratorium period, but I'm sure stuff will start to leak out by Saturday afternoon.
All right. So just a couple rumors that came out yesterday. Mark Stein advanced his Ricky Rubio report. Now, Mark Stein said a couple days ago that the Wolves are still very much actively shopping Ricky Rubio to various teams. The Knicks have had interest in the past. The Kings, according to our buddy Doogie, have had interest. And now the Utah Jazz,
mm-hmm,
looking at George Hill becoming an unrestricted free agent, and the Wolves have reportedly shown interest in him. So could you see, if the Wolves have some kind of an agreement with George Hill behind the scenes, could they trade Ricky Rubio to plug that point guard spot in Utah?
Yeah, it makes some sense.
And that would be, I think that would be a downgrade for Utah in the short. Now, Rubio's younger, so you'd get, because George Hill's going to be 30, and Ricky Rubio is, what, 26, going to be 27. So you would get younger if you're the Jazz, but... George Hill is a 40% shooter from three-point range. He's a pretty solid defensive point guard as well. I think he's a better overall player than Rubio is, and maybe even fits the Wolves better than Rubio does. So if Hayward left the Jazz for the Celtics and they lose Hill, and let's say you acquire Hill and get better shooting and you already got Butler, you're passing Utah
big trouble
in the standings.
At that point. So what would the Jazz have to give you back, do you think?
You know, I haven't scoped their roster enough. That might be a Doogie question for an hour from now.
Clearly, probably a draft pick and something that can come off your bench, maybe?
Well, I think the question would be, if you're the Wolves, what do you want in return for Rubio, ideally? And to me, it wouldn't just be future assets.
Right.
I think it has to be something that helps your team now. I think it has to be something, whether it's a big man who can start at the five, block some shots, and rebound, and that bumps Gorgie Jang to the second unit, thus bolstering your second unit.
Which is what Jim Pete said.
Yeah, he wants Gorgie to come off the bench as a big,
which
right?
I think he's probably 1,000% right on that.
Yeah, because I don't know if you're going to trade Ricky Rubio for a backup wing player. Wiggins and Butler are your starting two and three in some order. Would you trade Rubio for a backup wing player who plays 25 minutes and can shoot threes, which is kind of what Zach LaVine would have been, I guess?
Yeah.
Or do you trade? It's got to be someone that can fit in your rotation of seven or eight guys. I wouldn't want to make that trade unless you're clearing. I guess here's the yeah, but. If you're trading for a future like first round pick and the team that's acquiring Rubio can absorb the contract into their salary cap space, and thus instead of $20 million in cap room, assuming you get rid of Shabazz Muhammad, now you open up Rubio's cap number as well,
which I think
to
is
sign
the,
to have $30 million in free agency.
Yes, I think the Wolves' problem is this. I think because Tibbs was so proactive in trying to trade Rubio basically from day one, that nobody's coming back and saying, we'll give you this and this. I think teams are coming back and saying, you're trying to trade this guy. We'll give you something. Because I think if Rubio could have commanded what Tibbs was looking for, I think he's gone last year. I think it got to the point where he kept trying to shop him and teams kept saying, no, we'll give you something, but not much. Because the Wolves aren't dealing... And which is why I think the Wolves are desperately trying to put the genie back in the bottle in the sense of trying to say now.
I see that's another 90s music reference.
Did you see
right
what
there.
I did there?
A 90s
I didn't
music
do that on
reference.
Purpose.
There it is.
I didn't do it on purpose.
There
I seriously didn't.
Dan Bernstein, you listening in Chicago?
Dave, I didn't do that on purpose.
Throw it back to the 90s.
I didn't do it on purpose. I swear to God, I didn't. I didn't even know. I forgot about the song, okay? But I think what the Wolves are desperately trying to do now organizationally is go back and say, we are not trying to trade Ricky Rubio. We love him. And teams are saying, no, you don't. You've been calling us for the last... You've been blowing our phones up for 12 months now, Tibbs.
The other hard part, too, is if you're trading Ricky Rubio to a team that looks at his body of work over 6 years, it's unimpressive. We're talking 30-some percent shooting from the field, below 40%.
Yep.
We're talking about a very mediocre three-point shooter, a guy that you can sag off of defensively late in games. But... if you can convince a team that, hey, 26 years old, emerging into his prime, and look what he did in the final month and a half, 2 months of the season. In fact, they had there was a 9-day layoff. I believe that was the All-Star break, and then there were various trade rumors around that time. And if you just take from after the All-Star break, Rubio came out that first game against Dallas and went off for 14 assists, 13 points, was good from the field. Those last 24 games... if you're trading for this player, it's much more valuable. We're talking about 42% from the field, 35% from three, which is it's a little bit below league average, but it's respectable. You can, if you're going to shoot 35% from three, like you can shoot threes without. If you're going to shoot 25 or 30% from three, you should not be taking three pointers. 10.5 assists, 16 points. So if I'm getting 16 and 10.5 assists. And 4 or 5 rebounds a game, and a guy who shoots 42%, who's in his prime, that's a really interesting trade chip.
Which is what the Wolves are trying to sell right now.
Yes.
The Wolves have, I'm sure they're calling teams and saying, it's real. Now, so my question for you is this, because we've seen him certainly go through stretches at times where he looks good again, and then through stretches of times where he can't shoot. How much are you buying what we saw? At the end of last year, which was a pretty sustained period. I mean, he played well. But how much are you buying that could be him for a sustained period of time and not just, let's say, a month and then a month that he goes south again.
I would say that's the important part to some degree. I think that's his peak performance. I don't think he's ever going to average 20 plus points a game. He just doesn't have enough. I mean, watch him play. He's got an old man YMCA jump shot, and he's not very good finishing around the rim. He's gotten better in some of these areas, but sometimes it's easy to get fooled and tricked into someone's peak performance level within a season and think that that's the new norm. No, really, that's just their 90th percentile, and they're going to settle in and play around their 60th or 70th percentile.
That'll be their consistent basis.
It's like watching Eddie Rosario right now, for instance, and there might be some room there because he's still pretty young. What is he, 25 or 26 years old? Eddie Rosario has a bunch of multi-hit games. He's got a three-home run game. If you were to just look at Rosario over the last month, you'd say, wow, that's a future perennial all-star. That's a guy whose batting average is on the rise. He's got a bunch of home runs.
Yep.
Or is it that we're just watching his peak level of performance and he'll settle in at something lower? So I would, if I had to bet on Rubio, I would say 6 years in the league looks like a similar player compared to 6 years ago. That what we saw in the last 2 months is his 90th percentile.
Do you remember?
Can he ride that? Probably not.
Do you remember? Was that 2 years back where he spent months working with the shooting coach and he came back and
he had more arc on his shot.
And we went to a couple games and we're like, wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah,
that looks great. And it kept up for probably a good 3 weeks, a month, and then you went back and watched and it was right back. And that's my. After 6 years, I find it hard to believe that you're going to completely change your shot and your game. It doesn't mean that you can't work on things. It does mean that I think the Wolves are very smart to be proactive right now and saying, this is him, no really,
yeah,
and to deal him.
Here's another name that was thrown out there. I believe you tipped me off to this. I don't remember who reported this, but Andre Iguodala is an unrestricted free agent.
ESPN, yes.
Former star sort of centerpiece with the Sixers when they were bad. Went to the Nuggets for a minute, and he really found his role the last 3 years in Golden State as sixth man off the bench. In fact, didn't he win Finals MVP two or three years ago?
Yes, he did.
So he's made a name as a complimentary role player, a guy who can shoot somewhat respectably from three-point range, but his percentage the last 3 years is about 35-36%, which, again, like the difference between that and 40 or 42% over the course of a season is a big deal. The Wolves need... they need better shooters than that, but you know, you can at least trust him to play to shoot some threes. Perimeter defense has been a strong point for him, and he's just a valuable sort of amoeba type player who
veteran.
You don't need to run the ball through him. He can figure out how to be valuable off the ball. He's made $12, $12, and $11.7 million the last 3 years with Golden State. So when you're talking about $20-ish million in cap space, do you want half of it to go to a guy who's going to be 34 years old on maybe a multi-year contract? So I'm interested in Andre Iguodala because I know that he'd be willing to come off the bench and he can play defense and he can maybe shoot some threes. A little skittish on whatever his price tag may be if it's close to what he's been making the last few years.
Seven teams, Spurs, Clippers, Sixers, Magic, Nets, and Jazz, and Wolves
are
the seven teams. Here's what I'd love to know. How much of the transformation in this roster that we're seeing now is completely Tibbs, and how much is Taylor saying, Tom, I'm paying you a lot of money. I hired you. I gave you a multi-year contract. I didn't do it to build this thing.
Well, Glenn didn't demand Jimmy Butler.
I'm saying the overall roster reconstruction here, to go from a team that a year ago you looked at the roster and you said, man, they're building something. It's nice. It might take a while. They disappointed. But if you say that you were shocked that they didn't jump up to 40 wins, I mean, I wasn't shocked. I was disappointed. But I do find what we're potentially going to see now to be an interesting... I would love to know what the conversation was to be to the point of, I don't just want to be an 8 seed here. What I really would like to be, ideally, is I'd like to go from being a team that was hoping for an 8 seed to a legitimate 4-5.
Well, I think now that you've established that Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins, that those two guys represent your long-term young core. Jimmy Butler is along for the ride for at least the next couple years, maybe three, and then if you can get him on an extension. So Jimmy Butler is this amazing top 12 player that you sort of add to that young nucleus. And to me, anything else that you do, I mean, you've got cap room, you've got money to spend.
Yeah.
I don't think you have to worry about adding more young assets here. You've got your two core young assets. So just, I'm fine with adding 30-year-old players.
I am too.
It's more about, like, I'm not as worried about Iguodala's age as a player. I think he still has a couple more years to be productive. I'm worried about price tag plus skill set and age and the big picture.
Sure.
You should be able to add two or three good role players, but if you have to fill a starting point guard spot, like, what if George Hill wants $15 million? Well, you're not going to get Hill and Iguodala if George Hill wants a bunch of money, which he's going to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I'm a little bit torn on what they should do.
Sure. My point is this. I'm just curious to see. There is a very good chance that you're going to get to opening night for this team, look at that bench, and say to yourself, this feels like a Wolves team that I haven't seen in years and years and years. This feels like a team that is not going to beat Golden State, but that could actually not only make the playoffs, but win a round and maybe two rounds.
Yeah, but the city is small and lonely and cold, so it doesn't matter.
Skyway system does not work, I'm telling you. They're going to shut it down, and Butler's going to have to go outside, and he's going to demand another trade.
Let's get into this next, because this is an all-in move in many respects, where you're trading Zach LaVine, one of your core young pieces, and you're making an all-in, got-to-get-better-in-the-short-term move, landing Jimmy Butler. Let's go back and look at the other times the other sports teams in this town made an all-in move. You've gone back and looked at some of this. We're staring at a bright, shiny, 55-inch TCL 4K Roku TV, which is our studio sponsor here at 1500 ESPN. I love the Roku aspect because I'm a big streaming guy. I mean, I'm all over Watch ESPN, Fox Sports Go, HBO, Showtime, Netflix. I just finished House of Cards. What is it? Season 5, Season 6? Really, really good stuff. I love to stream through my mobile devices, and I've had the external Roku device in the past. The built-in Roku with these TCL 4K Roku TVs allows you to toggle back and forth between your menu of cable or satellite channels and your menu of streaming channels. So it's super easy to control, no cords and needing more outlets and power strips. It's all built into the TV. It's a connected TV with access to thousands of streaming channels. So find out why TCL TVs, America's fastest growing TV brand, and why it's one of the three best and largest TV companies in the world. Mackie and Judd.
Hang on. Mackie and Judd will return shortly.
So this is the dealio.
On 1500 ESPN.
Shot of the game, holds the ball out against Batum, circles to his right, dances back, fires.
Sriracha, he's hot.
My goodness.
I like that call. That's pretty good.
My favorite thing too is this, when you know, LA or Chicago people write, oh, this guy's going to a small town, he's going to a small city. You know, with current travel conditions, most guys don't live in your town now. It's not like, so if you
play, when you're making $20 million a year, you just fly private to wherever you want.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
But like if you play for the Wolves and you get traded here and you're making a ton of cash, you're going to live in a condo downtown. You're going to your practice facility is right by the place in which you play, which is perfect, which means you don't have to get in a car.
You probably live in the Carlisle, and you have a personal driver take you from the heated underground garage to the heated underground garage of the renovated Target Center.
And then you play 41 home and road games, and for the road games you get on a luxury liner bus or something, or back into your car, and that goes to the airport. And you get out on the tarmac, basically, walk onto the plane, and leave. Like, this whole notion of, oh, you're stuck. You know, you're stuck in Cleveland. You think, how many of the Cavs players do you think say, you know what, man, this is tough because I have to live here year-round in Cleveland? The season gets done, right? They go to Miami or L.A., and they train. I love the notion that we still think that it's 1964. And the athlete lives here, and he's got an off-season job here, and he's miserable.
It is ridiculous.
It's
funny. Obviously, you're spending some time in a city that maybe you don't love as much, but yeah. We will get back to, people are sending us some interesting possible Ricky Rubio trade scenarios. There's an article on Bleacher Report that we'll get to here with a pretty realistic Ricky Rubio trade to Utah, but the Jimmy Butler trade was a stack of chips on a poker table, pushing them toward the middle. You're not all in, and you didn't trade your whole young core, but you're pushing a lot of chips into the middle, and it's kind of an all-in trade, right?
Yes.
Go get a huge in-his-prime player.
You want to win right now.
Yeah, and it's and I brought up to you yesterday the elation among fans and just Wolves followers in this town when this trade was pulled. I think some of it was also overspilling the emotions, the frustration of the Twins not having made that move for 10 years. The Twins were good, but not championship good from 2001 through 2010.
Yep.
And they had many chances, even in 2015, although I didn't advocate for that because they weren't ready to really, like, they shouldn't, there's no way you're going to trade Miguel Sano in 2015 for a win now pitcher or something. But the Twins didn't do it for 10 years. The Wolves went out and they acquired a top name superstar. So yes. What are some of the other examples of teams going all in this town?
Well, I did this exercise based on the very simple what was number one, the excitement when a trade was made, and when you looked at that trade, did you say, okay, they're trying to get a complimentary player or a piece, or no, they just went and got a very key piece to win right now? And the Vikings, Wolves, and Wild exercises were very, very simple. Took no time at all. I'm only bringing this to the air because of the Twins one. The Vikings won last time, no question about it, Brett Favre, 2010. You go out and get Brett Favre. Brett Favre, and it wasn't a surprise, but Brett Favre comes here and changes the complete dynamic of that team, and you said to yourself, okay, for 2010, this team is all in, and it damn near worked. The Wolves, pre-Butler, Cassell and Sprewell, right? You brought Cassell and Sprewell here for the 2003-04 season. That year, it worked. Sprewell was obtained in a trade, as was Cassell from the Bucks. The Wild, that's simple again. July 4th, 2012, Parisi Suter. 13-year, $98 million contracts. Mm-hmm. It hasn't worked yet, but you said to yourself, this move is being made by the Wild with the intent of winning a Stanley Cup. Well, so those three are all simple.
All three of those took the team from where they previously were, and they went to at least a new plateau.
Yeah.
I mean, the Vikings went from no quarterback, like the Houston Texans are right now, 10-6. Yeah, they won a division, but really weren't that competitive in the playoff picture, to being a Super Bowl caliber team.
And all three of them screamed that you were that team, the moment that move was made, was attempting to do it with aspirations of a championship. This is what's scary about it, though. The Twins. Twins have made several roster moves. They've made several trades in the last 25 years. But the last time, I would argue, that the Twins made, oh my gosh, they have every intention of trying to win a World Series move, was this one. March 18th is the date. The year is 1992. John Smiley. You had lost Jack Morris. Morris pitched here in 91, walked after that, and you went into spring training saying, okay, this is a defending World Series champion team. It's really good. It lacks a pitcher, a good pitcher. And on March 18th, 1992, Andy McPhail sent Midrake Cummings, a big-time outfield prospect at the time, and Nagel, if I'm not mistaken, Denny went to the Pirates for John Smiley. And that's the last time that I remember the community being like, oh wow, that's impressive. I mean,
the Shannon Stewart trade was a good trade. But it was a conservative trade, too. It wasn't, you know, Bobby Keelty was not the organization's top prized prospect.
Correct.
I think at the time, Joe Mauer would have been the organization's top prized prospect.
Bobby Keelty was thought to be a nice player with an upside. Mm-hmm. But the day the Shannon Stewart trade was made, nobody said, oh, wow. The only surprise was that Terry would trade a prospect. That was it. The Smiley trade's the last time that you actually got the feeling back from the fan base that, okay, this move is being made with the intention of being all in, and you're trading two prospects. Cummings was a big deal back then. He was seen as the up-and-coming, I believe, a successor to Kirby in center, and was actually seen as the top prospect in that trade. And the impressive thing about that trade was you dealt two guys that you expected to be your future, because you also said there is a very good chance at that time to defend the World Series in 91.
Now, the hesitance, and I can think back to, you know, various points. I was a Twins blogger in 2006, if I recall, and even just on this station, 2010, even in the moment, it felt like a mistake that they weren't willing to go hard after Cliff Lee. because they had the lineup that year. Jim Thome was having an unbelievable season at age 40. Delman Young was having a career season. Denard Span was having, like, they had the lineup in 2010, even without Justin Morneau in the second half. They didn't have a closer, but they most importantly didn't have a top-notch starting pitcher that could go into Yankee Stadium or who could pitch against the Yankees at Target Field against CC Sabathia in his prime or playoff Andy Pettit. I mean, they ran Brian Dunsing out at Yankee Stadium in that playoff series as a starting pitcher.
Yes, they did.
A sacrificial lamb in a playoff series. So they've always had opportunities as a really good team to pull the trigger on giving up a top prospect or two for that key final piece, which doesn't guarantee you. In the NBA, that key final piece pretty much guarantees you a certain amount of success. If you land LeBron James in your Cleveland or Kevin Durant in your Golden State, free agency or trade, you're going to be a 50 or 60 win team at worst.
A top line starter, though, makes you say, wow.
It does.
That's the thing.
So the hesitance on the with the Twins, even going back to 2001, is twofold. The trade doesn't guarantee you nearly as much. The Brewers once got swept when they traded for CC Sabathia. So I could think of all kinds of examples.
Mm-hmm.
And the economics of baseball run counter to what most fans think. Well, there's no salary cap, so you can spend whatever you want, so you should be more aggressive as a small market team, but that's not the way it works. The lack of a salary cap in baseball actually makes the rich richer. The teams like the Yankees and the Angels, those top five or six markets, have so much more revenue flowing in with their TV contracts, with their stadium revenue, with their apparel.
Mm-hmm.
There's just more people feeding into the economic pipeline that you can't, unless you go into your own pockets as a billionaire, and if that happens, well, there's 29 other billionaires, and so that's an even playing field. So I understand the Twins, when they were the little engine that could at the Metrodome, prospects were really their pipeline for major league players because they weren't going to go get a $25 million Alex Rodriguez. They weren't going to get those players. So if you traded away your top two prospects for a rent-a-pitcher, you better be right. And if you don't cash in, now you've probably cut off 2 or 3 years of winning down the road.
And Smiley
I'm not
was.
Saying it's always the right decision, yep. But that was the logic behind why they didn't pull the trigger on those trades.
And now 92 was the time period before salaries had completely taken off and gone crazy. But Smiley was the guy. Pittsburgh traded him for prospects because he was going into the last year of his contract. And so that was very much a move made with the Twins aware that they probably couldn't sign him long term. I guess factoring that I had in putting this list together too is how often do you see a trade made or an acquisition made by a team and it stops you and you say, wow, Matt Capps might close games and that's nice. I'm talking about the Jimmy Butler trade stopped you. Like I looked at that about three times to sort of say, they just got Jimmy Butler.
Mm-hmm.
And how many times in this town, and when's the last time have you looked at a headline and seen, Favre signs, and you got to process it, because there's a lot of trades made, and a lot of them you think that's nice, but you don't have to process them. But in the case of the Twins getting Smiley in '92, Parisi, Suter, those deals or those free agent signings, you actually had to look at it about three times to be like, this team just did that.
There was a year, was it 2006? I think it was 2006, where there were Alfonso Soriano rumors swirling around the trade deadline. Holy crap, the Twins might really go for this thing. And that was a 96-win team without Alfonso Soriano. As it turns out, they could have used an extra starting pitcher. They didn't know that Liriano was going to blow out his elbow. But you went from Matt Garza for Alfonso Soriano rumors to Phil Nevin being the guy they acquired at the deadline.
God bless him.
Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Phil Nevin.
Oh, yeah.
Just washed up. Hadn't been relevant in 2 or 3 years. Once hit 40 bombs with the Padres, I think.
Yes. Yeah. No, if I'm not mistaken, the 84 Twins who choked against Cleveland made their run. At the end of that year, they went out towards the end and got two guys, Pat Putnam, an old fat DH, and Chris Spire. And you're like, really? This is really what you're, this is your push? Now, where I will defend teams is this. When you do make these type of moves, these big moves, you have to be extremely confident. Like, if this team, Falvey right now went out and made some huge trade, I'd say to myself, you're not prepared for that yet. So I am not advocating doing this for the sake of it. But what I am saying is when that window is squarely open, it's fun to see a team you follow actually say, we're going in right now.
Royals
we're
going with Johnny Cueto is another one.
That's exactly right.
You know, so that and that wound up in the regular season. He was bad down the stretch, but then he made a couple great performances in the postseason.
But that's the type of move that you don't see those type of teams make much, but when they do, you think to yourself, okay, this is going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
The Butler trade is going to be fun.
Yeah, 651-646-8255-877-615-1500. Vikings over-unders at 10 o'clock. Doogie with a scoop at 10:15. Jason Stark, 11:30.
Mackie and Judd will return shortly.
It's a small price to pay for countless hours of top-notch entertainment.
On 1500 ESPN. Don't stop.
Minnesota United FC will be taking on New York City this Thursday. That would be tomorrow, and you can catch that match right here. Pre-match covered 6 o'clock, kickoff 6:30 from TCF Bank Stadium on 1500 ESPN.
Thank you, Dave Harrigan. We have Vikings over-unders in about 10 minutes. Doogie with a scoop at 10:15. Jason Stark at 11:30. We're talking about Minnesota sports teams making that all-in move, that big splash move. Jimmy Butler, Herschel Walker, Brett Favre.
Herschel, you're right.
The July 4th signing of Zach Parise and Ryan Suter. And for the Twins, as you went back and you kind of researched this, unless you count Shannon Stewart midseason, but that was more just a nice complimentary acquisition. That wasn't. Now, he had an unbelievable second half, so he became an MVP candidate because
he
got
retrospect,
hot.
It was great, but yeah. That trade.
He wasn't
but
A-Rod.
That trade that day did not stop you for 1 second.
Yeah, so you got to go back to 1992, John Smiley, the last time the Twins made a big splash move, trade, free agent, unless we're missing something. 651-646-8255. Hey, Paul.
Hey. So I was really tickled that you mentioned John Smiley because I've been following this team since the 70s. And when you brought up big Twins trades, I immediately thought John Smiley. You guys nailed it. That is the last time. I mean, you nailed it. That was a big deal. And you couldn't have said it better. I'm sitting here 100% in on what you guys.
Well, and Paul, I wasn't very old. I was like 8 years old when they acquired John Smiley. But if you remember, the playoff structure was so different, and he was in his prime too. John Smiley was 27 years old when they made that trade.
Yes.
And the Twins, despite kind of falling down the stretch, they still went 90-72 that year, which in today's playoff format,
oh, they're wild card team.
You would have looked at that trade and said, if they hadn't traded for John Smiley, they wouldn't be a playoff team, and now they're a wild card team. But because they didn't have wild card teams in 1992,
right?
Then it was deemed as kind of a failed trade. They wound up watching the playoffs from home.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a big deal. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure, Paul. Thanks for calling.
Good call. Yeah, and I remember to this day when Midray Cummings was included in that deal, there were a lot of people like, holy cow, because he was their best prospect, and I believe he was going to come up and eventually replace Kirby in center, and I think the transition at that time was that Kirby was going to move to right, which he did when Shane Mack went to center. But the point was, that was the Twins from a position of strength dipping into their farm system, and McPhail saying, okay, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And that 92 Twins team went into spring training with a big loss there, because when Morris bolted for Toronto, you looked at that starting staff and said, okay, they're okay, but they're not great. And Jack obviously had pitched in game 7 in the 91 World Series. And so, yeah, that trade signified a fact that they weren't done yet. And I told you, until the Oakland series that year in July of 92, I've always said this, that is the best Twins team I've ever seen. That Twins team, until they got to that A's series, that is the most complete Twins team that I can recall seeing, and I started following them in 78.
You know what else the summer of 1992 was? It's funny how these things stand out to you when you think back to your childhood for me. It was the summer of Pedro Munoz. I just remember Pedro Munoz being one of my favorite players as a kid in like 1992, kind of mid-90s.
You really?
And he had, he kind of came on the scene. He drove in 70 and he was this new name and he played right field, right? Didn't he play right field? I think he played right field.
Yes, he played
outfield. Some corner outfield.
Yes, he did.
And he hit 270. He just came along. And when you're a young, impressionable kid and you're looking for, Kirby Puckett was everyone's favorite player, but Pedro Munoz for that summer was my favorite
player. I was sitting with the wife late night at the Golden Valley Perkins and once saw Pedro come in. Pedro's standing right there. I'm like, hey, that's Pedro Munoz.
Did he get
my wife's like, so who cares?
Did he get a chicken tender melt?
I didn't watch.
With a huge cup of extra ranch.
She's like, you're such a geek. Who cares? I'm like, but it's Pedro.
651-646-8255. Dave, you're on with Mackie and Judd.
Hey, boys, do you remember the circumstances of Tommy Herr coming to the Twins? Wasn't that supposed to be kind of a big deal, too? And it ended up being just a complete disaster.
It was a debacle. It was April of 92. It occurred on a Friday night. I woke up on Saturday, picked up my Star Tribune, and saw the big splash saying Brunansky traded to Cards for Herr. The Twins had not been able to find what they deemed to be a consistent second baseman for years and years and years. And I believe the supposed reason for the trade was because McPhail and Kelly thought that some Twins coming off of the World Championship in 87 had gotten fat and happy. And this was supposed to be the wake-up call. The problem was Tommy Herr. Now, that is a man who did not want to play in Minnesota. In fact,
he hated Minnesota.
The legend is he cried on the flight here. He was crying on the airplane because he had just been traded, and it was a complete disaster. And I think by the next year or shortly thereafter, he had been dealt to the Philadelphia Phillies. But, yeah, that was a complete debacle.
Was it because we lost Lombardozzi in free agency or something like that? I can't remember the circumstances why we needed him.
I don't remember, but we didn't deem Lombo to be that great, right? Because
right.
It went Tuffle, Lombo, and I think the McPhail regime at that point was always saying that they could find a more consistent second baseman. But the problem is you might want to find out if the guy has any interest in playing here first, and he was miserable from day one here. And not only that, legend is he not only sabotaged the Twins because he did not want to be here, but he's the guy that converted Gaetti from being, you know, the party boy fun guy to believing in God and telling us all that the world was going to end. It was all Tommy Herr's fault. The story is that they were in Seattle, and Tommy Herr had a pamphlet which basically said, on this date, the world is going to end unless you accept Jesus. And he gave it to Gaetti, and Gaetti absolutely bought in hook, line, and sinker.
Wow.
Yep.
Steve Lombardozzi, one of Dan Gladden's best friends.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks,
battling
Dave.
Steve. Yep. Good call.
The fight on the lawn, Lethal Weapon style. Lombardozzi.
You
want
to shout
Dan
the title?
Gladden.
Absolutely.
Vikings over unders when we come back here. Doogie with a scoop at 10:15 and Jason Stark at 11:30. Mackie and Judd.
Hang on. Mackie and Judd will return shortly.
Oh!
Yeah.
On 1500 ESPN.